not the only thing that God did for the Jewish people to set the stage. And I contend that while God was doing these things for the Jewish people, he was doing other things out in the world for other peoples, so that when the gospel came to them,
you'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Happy New Year! Have you ever tried to explain the pre-computer world to anyone born in the last decade or so? It's like they think surely, if not dinosaurs, there were at least woolly mammoths and saber-toothed cats running around when you were a kid. The world was very different before computers. So sometimes I wonder who made the bigger transition, my grandfather, who farmed with horses and then farmed with tractors and went from walking and riding horses to driving cars, or myself, who went from the world without computers to the world with computers. I wonder which is the bigger difference. And I tell you, I'm okay with computers most of the time. Mark Overly's not here right now. I can tell you I'm better at them than Mark is. But I will never be as competent in the computer world as my children, or especially my grandchildren, for whom the whole thing seems second nature. I am from a different time and place. And yet, Spirit of God, who reached into my world when log on meant throwing a piece of wood on the fire, the same Spirit of God reaches into the computer world and finds the way to bring people to Jesus Christ just as effectively as ever. This has always been going on. It went on in the very first generation of the church. The Christianity and the gospel was born out of the very Jewish world of the Old Testament, and through the happenings of the Old Testament, God had prepared the Jewish people so very extensively for the coming of the Christ. I hope that that is one thing that we got out of the preaching that led up to Christmas, is that God sets the stage. And we saw in Bethlehem how God, over centuries of time, put down layers of meaning and built in the entire message of the identity and ministry of Jesus Christ into that place where he was to be born. And that was not the only thing that God did for the Jewish people to set the stage. And I contend that while God was doing these things for the Jewish people, he was doing other things out in the world for other peoples, so that when the gospel came to them, they would be prepared, primed, made ready to receive it. And the gospel did have to move out of that very Jewish world in which it was born, west into the Greco-Roman world, which was another animal entirely. And there, praise God, it sank roots. And it moved into other localities and into other times and into other cultures. And in every single one, it seems that God had prepared the way so that when the gospel came to us, we would be primed to receive it. The Apostle John was a key part of this process in moving the gospel from the Jewish world to the Greco-Roman world. In fact, if you read the four gospels, and they are in the order that you find them in the New Testament because that is the presumed chronological order, Matthew is the one written first, and then Mark, and then Luke, and then John. If you read them in order, you discover that they show a transition, a progression from Judaism to Western thought. Matthew is a very Jewish gospel full of genealogies and lists to memorize and the prophecies, connections, and all of these things from the Old Testament. Mark, much less so. By the time you get to Luke, Luke is including little footnotes that say, this connects to the Jewish people and beliefs in this way. Matthew never had to do that because all his readers already knew all that stuff. Luke's Gentile readers needed footnoting. John is further removed from the Jewish beginnings of the gospel than Luke, speaking to a whole new world and culture. And so his gospel is different. In reaching out to these Greco-Roman people, in trying to present the gospel in a way that would capture their attention, a way that they would specifically understand, John talked about the Word. Now, John did not lose everything that had been part of the Jewish background in which he grew up, and he understood a lot of things about that phrase, the Word, that Jewish people would always understand. The Jewish people believed that words, spoken words, have a life and a power independent of the speaker. The word goes forth out of your mouth, and now it's out there, and it's doing things. Whether you want them to or not, once you have let them loose, they are out there in the world doing things, good things, bad things. Sometimes you think, man, I wish I could call them back. How many of you have ever heard that? You take that back. Can you? And the answer is no, you cannot ever really. Once the words get gone, the Jews said, they are out there with a life of their own accomplishing something. They believed this because they believed it about God. As it is said in the Old Testament, God's word goes forth from him and it does not come back to him void without accomplishing the purposes for which he sent it. And sometimes it's instantaneous and dramatic. God says, let there be light. A little handful of words from God. And what happens? And there was light. And God says, let the dry lands and the waters be separated. And what happens? Separation occurs. The Jews understood this about God. His words have power to go forth and accomplish things. Now, we are not God, but they understood this. We are created in the image of God. And so, they thought, the effect persists. Our words leave our mouths and go out there and have a life of their own. How many of you remember the strange and somewhat sad and often puzzling story of Isaac and Rebecca and Jacob and Esau and the birthright and the pot of soup and the stolen blessing? You remember that story? There's parts of that don't make sense to our way of thinking. Rebecca and Jacob, well, it starts Jacob and Esau. And Esau is hungry, and Jacob says, I'll give you my pot of beans for your birthright. And Esau agrees, and however that goes later, Rebekah and Jacob conspire together for Jacob to go before their father Isaac and pretend to be Esau in the days of his age when Isaac was nearly blind, and to receive the blessing that should have been passed to Esau. And when the whole thing is discovered, both Esau and Isaac are just filled with consternation and sorrow. And Esau is begging, haven't you anything left to give to me? And Isaac is sorry, I gave it all to your brother. It was only words. Why couldn't he just take it back? Why couldn't he say, hey, I didn't mean that. You tricked me. I'm giving the blessing to Esau. We don't understand that. Isaac would have said, those words are gone. I spoke them. And they are out there now in Jacob's life, accomplishing things. And I can't get them back for you. That is the way the Jews thought of words. Sometimes we think to ourselves, how silly to think that words have power independent of the speaker. How many of you have ever signed a contract? They're just words. Just some words on paper. And when you put your name on there, it's only two more words, three if you use your middle name. Maybe somebody here has four names. But I'll say two or three. Sam has four. Sign all four. Four words. It's just words. And yet, are you bound by them? How many of you remember a time when somebody who was important to you said something cruel to you? Maybe that person died later. Maybe they've moved on for whatever reason. They are not a part of your lives now. Did the words stick? And did they have power to continue to shape you, to limit you, to trouble you? Same thing happens with words of praise, fitly spoken. They have power for years to uphold you, strengthen you, and empower you. How many of us hate gossip? You know why you hate gossip? Because once those words, carelessly or maliciously, are spoken, you can never get them back, and they make the rounds, and they do damage everywhere they go. We begin, if we think about it, to understand something about what the Jews meant when they thought of words having a power beyond the lips of the person who speaks them. That would not necessarily have been part of the thought of the Greco-Roman people to whom the Apostle John addressed his gospel. But they also had an understanding of word that is different from ours. About 560 years before Christ, or about the time of the book of Daniel, which we have just concluded our Sunday night study in, about that time, a philosopher named Heraclitus looked around and he said, everything in the universe is always in a state of, and we have taken an English word from what he said, always in a state of flux. By which he meant, you have all these thousands or millions or whatever big number you choose, all these little independent pieces of parts, and they're all floating around independent of each other, and the relationships are always changing. Everything is in flux. I am not a welder. Any welders here? Jack can weld a little bit. Even if you're not a professional welder, you weld a little bit. Gary's back. Is Gary back there today? No, Gary's not. Gary's a pretty good welder. I'm not a welder, but you use a product called flux. And the purpose of the flux, like the purpose of the heat, is to stir up the molecules of the materials that you are working with to get them in this floating, changeable position so that you can impose a new order on the materials with which you are working. Everything, Heraclitus said, is in a state of flux. And what would happen if there was no intelligence, no one to impose an order on these floating, rapidly changing things? Soon, everything would fly apart. And whatever remained would simply be lifeless chaos. So he reasoned, there must be an intelligence that imposes order on the elements in flux. And what he meant by this intelligence is what you or I would at least begin to mean when we say God. Some guiding, shaping mind responsible for the order that we find around us. In the 19th and 20th centuries, people went through the same process again, arriving at what they called the God of the philosophers, and then the God of the physicists. But Heraclitus had his own name for this grand universal intelligence. He called it the Word. Actually, he called it the Logos. That was his word. The Logos. We interpret that as the Word. But it doesn't mean exactly what we mean when we say Word. It's not just a sound produced by tongues and teeth and lips and palates. The term embodies the difference between sounds like moo, quack, bark, and meow that we all learned singing Old MacDonald when we were kids, and things like this. 47 years ago, can you tell the difference? Moo, quack, bark, meow. 47 years ago, it is the difference between those propositions. Brian Regan is my favorite comedian. He talks at one point about dogs that bark at night. And he says, you'll be wakened up at 3 o'clock in the morning by some dog out there going, burr, 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 burr. He says, I always wonder, what are they finding to bark about at 3 o'clock in the morning? What is it they're trying to say? And he tried to put himself into the mind of the dog, and the best he could come up with was the dog was standing on the porch saying, hey, 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 hey. Nothing more than that. Animal communication, if it is communication, may convey some limited, very basic messages. When your cat growls and hisses, it is probably not as good an idea to pet it as when it is purring. I don't know, though, with our cat, just because she's purring doesn't mean at all that she won't bite you. But our cat is brain damaged. Animal communication may convey some limited, very basic information, but words, real words, are so much more. Depths and layers of meaning. Complicated, sophisticated ideas. Words can preserve the learning of the ages and recall history on demand. Words can pass on instructions for building anything. So when Heraclitus and the Greek philosophers that followed him spoke of the Logos, the Word, what they meant was what lay behind the universe to give meaning and significance to all the elements in flux. The way that a human being can take what would otherwise be random sounds and turn them into the Magna Carta, a Shakespearean sonnet, the Declaration of Independence. Only the Word, capital W, that Heraclitus pictured is bigger and grander than us, and the universe is its speech. John wanted to bring the good news to these very non-Jewish Greco-Roman people, and in this he thought he saw his opportunity. And so he began his gospel with these words: "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God, and all things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of the men, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness comprehends it not." And the Greek peoples understood John perfectly. The Word, the Logos, the grand intelligence beyond the universe, that which provides meaning and cohesion. And of course, we don't comprehend it. It's so much bigger and grander than us. We know it must be there, but what do we know about it beyond that? They understood exactly what John was talking about. And then John proceeded through the witness of John the Baptist and the arrival of Christ, which he frames like this in verse 14. "And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." And the Greeks were hooked. If the eternal intelligence that lays beyond the meaning implicit in creation, whom we can recognize exists, but of whom we can know almost nothing, if that Logos is going to take on flesh and come down here so we can know Him, then we want to know Him. Who is this guy? The Word become flesh. That's what's going on in the first little bit of the gospel. According to John, the result was that the good news of Jesus Christ was comprehended by a whole new set of people who had been prepared for it, primed for it, along a different path than the one by which God led the Jews. And the world was changed again. And the world would be changed again and again and again as the gospel moved through centuries and continents and cultures, and always found that point of contact because God had built it in to our experience. And what I've said so far gives us, I hope, a better grasp of what John was about in the first chapter of his gospel, and historically how those things develop. But I tell you that I think God prepared us to recognize the same truth as it is embodied in Scripture, and prepared the ways of contact and points of understanding in our society. I have not asked these people about this. Let me see. Joe, would you come up here? Russ, would you come up here? And Rick, would you come up here? Pick them all from one spot over there. None of you guys are in the 8 o'clock service, right? And I've not talked with you about this beforehand. Okay, very good. So you and Joe and Rick and Russ. Each of... Okay, tag team wrestling. Each of you, you and you, and you and you, have discussed an important, significant project, and you have agreed, each of you, to do your part in it. You are giving to each other your word. Russ to Rick, and Rick to Russ. Russ to Joe, and Joe to Russ. You are giving your word to each other that you will do your part to bring this thing about. Now what will you do? I didn't have to tell you that, did I? That's what you do. I give you my word. Up comes the hand. The flesh is pressed. And the pledge is sealed. You can sit down. That wasn't so hard, was it? No? Okay, great. Next time, tag team wrestling. This is built into us. I could have called up any other men in the congregation. Jack, you'd have done the same thing, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you shook hands to Silas? Wouldn't you shake hands to seal that? We all would. We're going to reach out. I give you my word. God gave us His word. He promised a lot of things, some of them already fulfilled. Some of them being fulfilled, I think, as I go on. But there's this one big one. He says in these promises, I am going to overcome death for you. I'm going to overcome death for you, Elmer, Charlie, Kathy. I'm going to overcome death for you, Jill. I'm going to overcome death for you, Norma. I'm going to overcome death for everybody. How many of us believe this? I believe this. I believe this. I know why it's called faith. Because it hasn't happened yet. Everybody I know is going to die. I'm going to die. Barring the soon coming of the Lord, everybody in this room right down to the youngest one is going to die. That part of the promise has not been fulfilled yet. How can I believe that it is true? Because God gave me His word. How? How can the immortal, invisible, spiritual God, whom I cannot directly see or touch, how can He accomplish this giving of His word, this sealing of the pledge to me? Word became flesh. And Jesus Christ, in His own flesh and blood person, walked among us, and in that flesh and blood assumed the cost of our salvation. This is the hand of God extended to seal His pledge. Take His hand. Receive His word.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.